1 Corinthians, Paul says, "For we are God's fellow workers, you are God's field, you are God's building. According to the grace of God which was given to me as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, and another builds on it. But let each one take heed how he builds on it, for no other foundation can anyone lay than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ." In this podcast, we explore those who went the wrong way. We examine why it happened, how it happened, and who it happened to. But most importantly, we always ask the question, could it happen to us? Thanks for joining us here on Faith, Frauds, and Falsehoods. Before we begin, let us be clear. The opinions we present are ours alone and do not represent the views or opinions of our respective churches or employers. Now, let's begin.
Oh, good evening, Matt. We are back once again talking about David Koresh. Last week, we talked about some of the history that led to David Koresh's involvement in Waco, right? I think we both kind of learned that he wasn't necessarily there at the very, very beginning, right? And so it kind of gave us some information on the background of where he was coming from, where he was going. But tonight, we want to talk about some social things. But first, let me ask you, since we're talking social, anything going on in your life that's new?
Socially?
Yeah.
Oh.
What you got?
We went to a stranger's house. Not a stranger, but some people we don't know so well, with several other people from our Sunday school group, and like had a Thanksgiving dinner thing with them. That was a new social experiment for me. I'm almost 40 and I've never really done things like that before. But as you probably know, and our listeners have probably heard me say before, I think that the Lord has supernaturally blessed me with being able to be social when I need to be. Supernaturally blessed me that people like me. I'm constantly confused by that. Why do people like me? I could be my own worst critic and tell you lots of reasons not to, and you know me well enough to know reasons not to like me. But in general, when I meet people, they generally like me, and I'm able to carry a conversation and carry on. And I think that's a supernatural gift that the Lord's given me. It's allowed me to make a living and allow me to work in the kingdom because of that.
Yep.
So
that's awesome.
And the people that we were meeting with, I really liked them. They're people in similar life stages as us and in similar places and things. And so there was a lot of things we could connect with on that. And they all love the Lord. And so there's that to talk about. And very passionate about that. So that's pretty cool.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So we did that. Went to a funeral this weekend. My wife's aunt passed away. And, you know, funerals are never, you know, the most happiest thing, but it always makes you think. It always makes you think, do I have enough life insurance? How's my funeral going to go? And it makes you think about having to, you know, your family having to go through that. So, I think we're going to sign up for some extra life insurance. We have life insurance, but I think we're going to sign up for some extra life insurance because I bought this giant house this last year. I'd like my wife to be able to pay the house off if I was to pass away.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I broke my rule today.
You mix whiskey and
for
vodka?
The first time in a long time. No, I went to Walmart between Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Oh, I didn't know that was your rule, but it's a good rule.
Since I was in college, that has been my rule. I do not set foot inside a Walmart between Thanksgiving and Christmas unless it's an emergency. And then it's at like 6 o'clock in the morning, right? But I did. I broke my rule because Jackie needed some something to drink. She was out of some drink mix that she uses or whatever. So I said, well, I was going to go to Market Street, but I'll run to Walmart. Never again will I break my rule.
It's scary, huh?
I can't stand going to Walmart. It is. You know, and you don't realize, right? And we're off on a tangent, but that's cool. You don't realize how much you know, Walmart pickup and delivery impacts the way you shop.
Oh, yeah. You buy way less extra stuff.
Yeah. And you don't have to know where everything is, right? You just search too. For what you need. You know, I think I walked past the bread that we needed like four different times because I couldn't find it because it's down on a weird section of the aisle. But yeah, so that was my social experiment for today. And it just, I won't break that rule again. I don't mind Market Street, but Walmart is a no-go.
Well, we actually went to Market Street. We tried to go to eat lunch after church today, and a lot of places were super mm-hmm. busy. We were running a little later than usual. This is a month that I'm working on Sunday, so
yeah.
We ended up going to Market Street for lunch, and it was quite delicious.
Yeah, they got some good food.
We had their barbecue, which was okay. It was better than most restaurants' barbecue. Not better than mine, but better than most restaurants. I had their fish, which was actually good. Their macaroni and cheese, which was good. I had a vegetable medley that was probably good 3 hours before. It'd just been sitting for a while, but it was probably good originally. But we did that, did a little shopping, picked up some stuff for supper later, and that was pretty good. But I ended up running to Target. We were doing some Christmas decoration, putting up our Christmas tree today. I ran to Target. I don't have such a steadfast rule as you, but I, in general, don't like going to those stores. I went to Target because I'm better than you, just so you know. No, actually, because I didn't want to go to Walmart. Walmart is closer, but I'm uppity now, so I'm like, well, let's just go on to Target. It's not that much further. And I was looking for... All right, so we bought our first house this last year. I'm getting way off on this tangent. And we need to hang stockings. Mm-hmm. Last year, we bought the house right before Christmas, and we didn't really decorate. This year, we're decorating. We wanted to hang stockings, and I didn't want to put a hole in the mantle to hang stockings with the tack or something. I don't want to put a hole in the wood, you know? So I want to get those little stocking hangers, those little weighted things you put there. Target should have those. Yep. The Christmas aisles, the four aisles of Christmas stuff, was insane. People's kids running around everywhere, picking up everything, touching stuff, coughing on things. I'm not a pro mask person, but I sure wanted to wear a mask and some Lysol. And then I couldn't find the stocking hangers. Like you said, I'm not used to actually looking for stuff. And I found a thing that said stocking hangers, and I dug through all the stockings there, and I couldn't find any. I did what I should have done in the first place, is I came home and got online and just ordered them. They'll be here later this week. I don't know why I thought I should go to the store and buy something.
Right. Just no, Jackie got ours at home. Yep.
Oh, I wouldn't have thought about at home.
Yep. She loves at home. I mean, it's close to us, so she's over there at least once a week.
Oh, wow. I'm sorry. I feel bad for your wallet on that one.
She's good at buying stuff that's on sale.
She likes this on sale stuff.
She likes the on sale stuff.
Have y'all been to the, is it Pop Sugar? Pop Shop? Pop? Well, we'll get to the podcast. I'll have to tell you about this later. It's like Five Below, but a little more upscale. Kind of like Five Below meets Family Dollar, but a little more upscale.
Okay.
Not all the mess in the aisles. All self-checkout, all the fancy paper bags. Some people really hate the all self-checkout thing, but I think more and more stores are going to do that. McDonald's just opened a restaurant here in North Texas that has, you order with the app. You don't go up there and order. You order with the app from your car or on the way or whatever. You go through the drive-thru, you know, do the thing with the app, and they have a conveyor belt that brings your food out to you. You don't interact with people at all. I'm for this. I, for one, welcome our new robot overlords.
We're on this tangent. We might as well keep going. Part of me, right, that millennial, I don't want to deal with people side of me is like, oh yeah, I'm all for that. But then here this last week, I've basically turned off Netflix for the kids, and they're only watching stuff that I have on my Plex server. And so we've been watching Home Improvement. love Home Improvement. It's a great show.
That's right. Just so our readers know, our listeners know, that's the show that y'all all think is called Tool Time, but it's really right. called Home Improvement. Yes. But in your head, you think that's Tool Time.
Yep. Uh huh. But it's, you know, the kids on the show, you know, they're wild and crazy, but they have manners and they're respectful. And so I'm like, yes, I want the kids watching this thing because it's a whole lot better than the junk they're putting out now. But one of the things is, you know, communicating with people, right? We're at a point in society where it's hard to even know how to communicate with people unless you're behind a keyboard. And that's just not going to work long term. It's gonna be a mess.
Well, this is for a different podcast, but that's where the church should be coming in. Church should be influencing society in this world, not of it. You know, that's where we should be influencing. This is where it's good to build communities, especially organic communities, where we have a chance to interact with each other. You know.
Yes, for sure.
Now, I kind of see a little different angle of that. As often as the case, we don't always see everything 100% the same. I think that from that angle, eliminating the non-necessary things might make that more powerful. As we eliminate the day-to-day that often just takes the place, then we need to seek out communication. And the best place to do that is through the church.
Yeah, but you know, when you think about how many hours a day that you spend looking at your phone already, right? When you start adding the things that typically still required human interaction to that, it's just going to get worse. I seriously considered buying me a flip phone for my last phone because I wanted to quit using my phone so much, but
you and I wouldn't talk near as much, right?
Right, yeah, because I wouldn't have Facebook Messenger.
Right. Although we should talk about that because I want to switch to something else, but we'll talk about that offline. Actually, let's discuss that a little bit because for a similar reason, one of my Facebook friends asked a question about Facebook and some different options. Do you still use it? Do you don't still use it? Which I thought was weird since they were asking it on Facebook. I think it's a good thing. I think it's a bad thing, et cetera. You know, recently I took Facebook off my phone. I left Messenger, but I took Facebook off. I ended up putting it back on there. And you know why I put Facebook back on my phone? Because I had to take my son to jiu-jitsu. And I just didn't want to socially interact with those hooligans that were there. Like, I was the only dad sitting there. Okay? So it's always this awkward, weird situation when you're the only dad anyway. And all these kids, they're little kids. Why are other people's little kids crawling across me? This is a no-no. My son would never do such a thing. But they got all their little kids because their big brother's over here and the little kids are over here. And mom's over here talking to someone else or on her phone, not paying attention. Or they're talking to their little gaggle in the corner. And I had to tune out. So to tune out, I put Facebook back on my phone. You know what I'm saying? And there are some people that I communicate with only through Facebook, mostly through Messenger. And that's why I left Messenger at the time, because I mean, you and I talk almost every day through Messenger, right? We don't necessarily have to talk through Messenger.
I have your phone number. I could just text you.
Right. Well, maybe you would be a green and blues don't talk to greens very often. So there's that. You're kind of not in the cool people thing, you know? Sorry, buddy.
You know what? That's just all the more reason to go to a flip phone.
Right? That's just more reason. It can't be blue or green
That's right.
If you're on the flip phone using the T9 to text.
Exactly.
But, you know, we wouldn't find the time to sit and have a conversation as often as we chat back and forth. Not that we have a conversation every day. We might say two lines to each other or 200. Mm-hmm. It just depends on what's happening, right? I also find text messages easy to, okay, I read it, and then I'm going to go on. I'm going to reply, and I never get around to reply until 2 days later, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I do that to you sometimes. I'll come back and be like, oh, I forgot he even said that. Okay, now I'm not going to reply, you know?
Yeah.
It's all over the place.
It's usually when I send you another message to
Right, and then I see the last message. And I'm like, oh, yeah, he said something about that. I never even said anything. Okay, yeah. And I do that to everybody. Don't feel offended.
I do it too. You're good.
But you know what? Let's use that, since we're almost at the 15-minute mark here, let's use that to lead into our social thing. Because that was kind of a big thing for the Branch Davidians there in Waco.
Mm-hmm.
David Koresh was a good communicator. He was a able preacher. I don't want to use the word good preacher, because obviously I don't agree with his message. But he preached and people wanted to listen to what he had to say.
He was a very capable public speaker who could stand in front of people and get their attention and hold their attention.
And from what I understand, he was very well,
for the most part,
on one-on-one with people. People wanted to be his friend. Oh, I have the one of the capabilities of a cult leader. Ooh. Yeah. It's that whole moral, ethical, legal thing where I can't start a cult.
I was going to say, what our listeners don't know is, you know, we're just going through all of these things so that we can make sure that we don't pinpoint any of them when we start our own cult. And so people don't realize that we're a cult.
Yes. Well, I've heard other cult podcasts are exactly like that. We should discuss that sometime. There are some other cult podcasts out there that are ran by cult leaders. Some people allege. We've not looked into that, but we should look into that and see.
Think. We'll dig into that one.
Not to be cultish or not or anything, but threw me off. Anyways, talking about David Koresh. So David Koresh was a very social person, and he also claimed to have heard from God, that he's a prophet, right? That's kind of how he started his whole thing. As we discussed, you know, he had these revelations from God, and then he had the battle and all this. So then he's got Mount Carmel out there, Mount Carmel. Carmel. And I told y'all before, he had the house in California, and that's where he recruited Thibodeau, who wrote the book and is where most of the movies and stuff that have been based off of Thibodeau's stories, because he was in the band, and that was also, he had kind of that rock star vibe, right? Not only was he had the rock star vibe, but he was doing his own production company. He was recording his own stuff, you know? So people wanted to follow such a thing. Go ahead. You were going to say something.
I was going to say, if you watch, you know, the videos of him preaching or anything like that, you don't get rock star vibe at all. He just kind of seems like, I don't know, he's this quiet, well-spoken kind of guy that is really kind of nerdy looking.
Oh, totally nerdy, even for the 80s, right?
Definitely don't get rock star vibe.
But remember that back then, rock stars were nerds to start with back then. In the 80s and 90s, you could be a rock star and be ugly. Later on, you had to be Justin Bieber, right? But back then, you could, it's something I've always thought about rock music, you know? Look at some of the rock stars. Look at Axl Rose or... who's the guy that's
Slash?
Who's the guy that's a million years old? I think he's still playing
with the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, and you know, he's been ugly his whole life. But
right, I can't even think of his name for the moment.
But he's a rock star, you know. Anyways, some of that stuff wasn't as required for that then. I think it was almost part of the aesthetic. But as for, you were talking about his preaching. Yeah, he is not Mr. Charismatic, jump up and scream at you type of preacher. That just wasn't his type of thing. He also preached a long, long time. And he was not the and the Lord said and type preacher. I heard one of those preachers this weekend. It's hard for me to keep up. But some people, you know, they kind of preach to that cadence, right? Kind of almost preach and singing type carrying on thing. But that wasn't really his style. But he would preach for a long time, and I think a lot of people considered him to be very educated. I know that one of his main people, the name misplaces me, his right-hand man, who was a very well-educated, seminary-trained guy, met David Koresh and said, "Oh, this guy knows more about the Bible than I do, so I'm going to follow him." A lot of his followers right. believed that he was the expert in the Bible because he told them he was.
Man, you know that my Bible knowledge is pretty extensive. But if people started following me because of my knowledge, we'd be in trouble.
You think?
My knowledge is not complete. Oh yeah, there's a lot of stuff that I know that I that doesn't need to be something that you follow me for.
Well, most people would follow
to the theology. We'll get to it.
Yeah, they'd follow me for my good looks.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I have friends that'll lie for me, as you just evidenced right there. So, but yeah, so they considered him pretty well educated. And I will tell you, we both work in IT, right? And I'm sure you've seen this phenomenon happen. When you talk about things that people don't know about, it almost doesn't matter if you're right because you sound like you're right. Now, right. I'm not saying I make up IT stuff, but I'm saying that they don't know if I really know or not know. But when I talk and I use a few technical terms, or even if I don't use technical terms, I just sound very confident in what I'm saying. That's something I've learned as a social skill and definitely as a work skill, to go in and be confident. I used to always, when I teach entry-level mm-hmm. techs, I would always teach them to be confident in front of the customer. You know,
yep.
You walk in and give them the confidence you can get this resolved. Even if you don't know, you can even say, "I don't know." But they're going to think you know everything when you say, "I don't know, but I'm going to find the answer here." They believe you, and they don't even believe you're going to find the answer. They just believe you actually know. You're just being modest.
Right.
You know? And I'm like, no, I'm being truthful here. But if you're very confident, they're going to be confident. Success breeds success, and failure breeds failure.
Yep. And that's something Koresh was he exuded confidence.
So let me tell you about confidence. So, when he was young, we talked about he fell in love with this teenage girl. He was in his 20s himself. And he went to her daddy and said, "I want to marry your daughter." And she was like, what was she, 14, 15?
14.
And her daddy's like, no, and kicked him out of the congregation and excommunicated. Okay. Well, she was way too young for him. And yeah. But then later in life, he pulled this same thing over and over again. The one, his first legal wife was Rachel. He went to her parents. So her parents were living out there on Carmel before he got there. Then the whole thing, and then he's in control. And they knew that he was with the old lady. He was trying to have a kid with the old lady. They knew all this. They knew him. And yet he goes to them and says, "God told me that I need to marry Rachel. She's 14, and since we're in Texas, you can sign her over to me as my bride." And they did.
Right.
And they did.
Yep.
With Rachel, he had a kid very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
That kid was born in 1984. And that was Cyrus. Cyrus was his oldest son. Now, there might have been another kid previously that he never really knew. But Cyrus is the one who was raised as his son, and was at Mount Carmel, and was at the siege, and was killed in the siege.
Right.
It occurred to me earlier when I was reviewing some things about Cyrus, I like to go down these little rabbit trails of the different people involved.
Yeah.
Cyrus was killed when he was around 8-9 years old. Years old, I think. It'd be 9. Something like that. That's the age my son is now. And that always kind of sets in my heart a little bit, right? You got kids around the same age as well.
Yeah.
And that just sets with me thinking, man, Cyrus was not one of the kids that they sent out because Koresh felt these were his kids and he wanted his kids around him. And they did autopsies and stuff on them. And there was rumors, the FBI was saying that Cyrus was shot, that David shot Cyrus on purpose. But that's not what happened. The autopsy reveals that he could have been killed from a head wound, not a, a blunt force, not a shot, but he was most likely killed from the gas.
Right.
Because his mama was on top of him and his sister, who was also David's daughter, in the room when it was gassed. The FBI, talk about social things, and we're going to talk about some harsh things, y'all, so bear with us a little bit. Yeah. We went from talking about it and kind of joking, but we're going to talk about some harsh things. The FBI claimed that David Koresh took all of the children, which were mostly his children that were left, and put them in a central sleeping room that somehow he knew would be attacked. And so he put them all there so they would be killed. And they claimed that he did this on purpose because he wanted his children to be killed in the attack. That's what they ran in the news, and People Magazine carried it. You can go find it on People Magazine's website right now. That David Koresh put all those children together so they would be killed during the raid. However, we have heard from other sources who were there with them that is not what happened at all. The children were trying to get out to the bunker. Oh, they also claimed that there was a school bus that was buried, and it had lots of fresh, clean air. And then when they did the attack, they assumed all the kids would be sent to the school bus so they would be safe. So they thought it was okay. They wouldn't hurt the kids. But the tanks ran over the tunnels going to the school bus and ran over the school bus on purpose. And the school bus was filled plenty of gas, and some children did die in the school bus. Lots of them did. And there's no evidence that it points to David Koresh intentionally putting those kids in a place to be killed because he didn't know what was going to be attacked where.
Right.
You know, he knew they were going to come in at some point, but he didn't know when. They were still negotiating. He thought they were still waiting on him to finish his recordings. I think that was naive of him to think that was going to happen, but he had already pushed them for weeks and weeks at this point, so why not a few more days?
Yeah.
But my point is, they intentionally ran false information. And I want to talk about some more false information about Cyrus. This is why I went down the rabbit trail of Cyrus. So one of the reasons for the raid by the ATF, do you know what ATF stands for, Brian?
It is the, well, at that time it would have been the BATF as the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms.
Yes, yeah, we call them ATF, but it's the BATF.
Yep.
Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. They claim they went out there for some manufacturing of automatic firearms, and we talked about that a little bit and their thing on that. But part of what they put on the warrant was that they were going out there because of abuse of children.
Okay.
Now, Texas CPS had investigated. The claims were that when Cyrus was 3 years old, maybe four, Koresh had punished him. I'm trying to remember what he was punished for. He was punished for questioning. Oh, he was punished because he wouldn't call another woman mama, only his own mom. But the way they raised their children, which we'll get into in a little bit, he was supposed to call another woman mama, other women mama, and he would not when he was like three or four. So to punish him, they refused him food and made him sleep on the kitchen floor. This is what the story is told. And then he got too weak, so they gave him food and made him sleep in the garage and told him that there were rats in the garage, and when he fell asleep, the rats were going to gnaw on him. And they made him sleep in the garage for several weeks. And so somebody went to CPS about this, and CPS came out and investigated and found no such thing. They also claimed that he was spanking babies, like baby babies, and stuff like that. And again, CPS didn't do anything. Now, granted, we all know CPS is not perfect. There are problems in CPS. Mm-hmm. There's an article in the news today about CPS took away this woman's children. And then when they all went to court, the judge found there was no reason at all to take away the children and gave her back all the children. And she had the children for a month, her and her husband, and then CPS repealed the decision. They came by every day unannounced during the whole month And then they appealed the decision and got a different judge to rule to take the children again. And the woman, when that happened, decided to take her children and run. Mm-hmm. After consulting with her lawyer, a day or two later, she finally turned her children back over to CPS, and they're fighting in the courts. Don't know the whole story on that. That's just as much as we know. But it sounds like she claims there was some corruption in CPS and that they have a personal vendetta against her. I don't remember the exact details, but I should mention that they've both been through all the checks and different things before. They're standing members of the community,
Yeah.
They're people who you would want to be, you know, foster parents, right? But anyways, my point is, we talked about another cult, the FLDS. Did we cover the FLDS? Or no, we just talked about them? You and I have talked about them. I think we've covered them yet. When we talk about them, we'll talk about how CPS failed massively, where there was abuse happening. This is why I want to point this out. In the FLDS situation in Texas, not terribly far from Waco, not far for Texas standards. The CPS came in and found no wrongdoing when actuality there was massive wrongdoing and children were being raped. So it is possible the CPS found no wrongdoing in this case and they were wrong and Koresh was abusing these children. It's also possible that they were right and Koresh wasn't abusing these children. What's interesting to me and what's often pointed out is that the ATF had that as part of their warrant, even though there was no... They had been investigated and found that nothing was happening bad to the children.
Right, and that wouldn't fall under the purview of ATF. That would be...
Right, how's that even ATF anyway?
FBI at the most.
Right, and it's only FBI if you take them over state lines. That's how Alamo got caught.
Yep.
Now,
that's right, we talked about Alamo.
Koresh was a bad guy, and he was quote-unquote marrying, which we call statutory rape, young girls. Because remember, he can't legally... Right. He legally married Rachel. So there's an argument maybe that that wasn't statutory rape legally. But morally, come on, dude. She's 14. That's a freaking little girl.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I realize our society's changed. But you know what? Our society's changed. She's a little girl. But all the other women, he couldn't legally be married to them because he was legally married to Rachel.
Right. And Texas doesn't allow for polygamy.
Right. So, anyways, so they're talking about Cyrus. So Cyrus was kind of the, it's where the alleged abuse was happening, you know? And Cyrus, some former members and people who were there say that Cyrus was always treated special. He was always treated as, well, that's David's oldest son, you know, almost as if he would take over one day. And, you know, he believed that his children were going to be important, but he had to have a whole bunch of children. He wanted 24 of them, right?
Right.
And so the other social thing when we're talking about social stuff is some point after he started leading this group out there, he went to everybody and he said, okay, I'm going to relieve all the men of their marriages. He had their marriages annulled, at least spiritually, according to them. And he basically took all their wives. He started sleeping with everybody's wife. Started having children with a lot of them. Any of them he could, he had children with. The ones he couldn't, they just helped take care of the other children. One woman claims that she helped with the birth of at least 9 of his children out there.
Wow. Wow.
So imagine you're listening to this religious leader. You believe he's a prophet from God. And then he comes to you and says, hey, I'm going to take Jackie from now on. Y'all can still, you know, y'all got a dorm room over there, but you're not sleeping with her anymore. That's a distraction for you. It's a burden for you. I'm going to take on that burden. And that's how he phrased it. He was going to take on the burden. I mean, listen, if he did that to that me, I'd let him try with Chelsea because she cut him. She cut him straight up. That'd be the end of the cult leader, let me tell you.
Right?
Oh, y'all, I love my wife to death. I promise you, I'm not scared of her. Probably, but you should be. She likes me, so
absolutely.
There's that going for me.
Oh, you know, something that we've brought up in every cult that we've dealt with so far.
Sex comes up in every cult.
Except for Heaven's Gates, Hell's Flames, right? But
well, sort of the opposite, because they were getting themselves castrated.
No. Heaven's Gates, Hell's Flames, not Heaven's Gate.
Oh, not Heaven's Gate. Yeah.
The play. Right. Yeah, but, you know, some form of extreme sexuality has been present in every one of them.
Yeah. Well, the play, I think, wasn't so much a cult as it was a falsehood.
Right.
Face frauds, yeah. Falsehoods, whatever, you know.
Yeah, I think we only gave them two stars. So.
So, the extreme there, that's important because mm-hmm. that's one of those base human things. So, we're mammals. We want to mate. And that's the object of a lot of sin. It's not all sin. I think all sin goes down to pride eventually. But sex comes into those things, and it's a big thing for sin. Paul spent a long time talking about this. What'd he say? Yeah, it's better to be single, but if you can't help yourself, mm-hmm. go get married. You know?
Right.
Because he was single, but he knew the human condition. He knew how humans are. Humans are designed to mate. I mean, Adam was made, and then God said, oh, I need to make Eve. He needs a companion.
Right.
You know, we were designed for that.
Now, God didn't quite say it like that, like it was a surprise that he needed to make Eve.
Okay.
But
okay, it wasn't a surprise.
He did turn around and say, yeah. Sorry.
No, it's all good. Yeah, I'm being
it's public. We got to make sure.
A little, yeah. Laissé about it there, but where was I going with that? Well, I was just talking about, yes, that's a common thing. And also, we've noticed that it never happens from the beginning.
Right.
It happens over time, and then mm-hmm. something happens, and then they get comfortable enough, the leader gets comfortable enough, they can institute such a thing. You know, Jim Jones was originally married to one woman. Mm-hmm. And then he got comfortable enough that she was put to the side. You know, yeah. I don't think we have covered Manson yet, although we should cover him because I've done all the research. Manson was never really with one woman.
We only do one of these a month.
Right.
Right.
He was never really with one woman. He actually recruited by doing that, so he might be the exception. His recruitment method was to get a woman alone, usually a young teenager, by the way, alone in a van, mm-hmm. sleep with them, and then all of a sudden they're his follower. I'm not sure what sort of juju he had, but man, that was his recruitment. The Alamos, for what it looks like, they were pretty, you know, Tony Alamo was stuck on Susan. She was almost the leader of the cult, really. And then when she passed mm-hmm. away, all of a sudden he took on all these other wives. And again, he went for the same thing. He went for all the young girls.
Right.
I think they do that because they're easier to manipulate, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes a shame thing. So in Koresh's thing, they weren't going to go to anybody about this because what do you say? Oh, this guy took my wife. And they're like, who took your wife? This guy? You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah.
One of the reasons the raid happened was whenever he made the announcement that this was going to happen, some members left at that point. Not everybody just took it. One of them was his right-hand man at the time, basically told him, you're not taking my wife. No, that the Lord didn't tell you this. You're wrong. You're not taking my wife. And he left. That guy, I think his name was Mark, he was, you know, witness for the FBI later on. He was the one trying to tell people about what it looked like inside, even though he hadn't been there for years by the time the raid happened. But he was telling people about what it was because he used to be the right-hand man. But he couldn't deal with that. Mm. He could deal with a lot of things. And, you know, another thing about that is they had some money. They weren't super rich, but they had some money. The whole reason for the guns, like I said, they were trying to make money doing that. But they intentionally did not live very extravagant. They lived very frugal. They ate very, very simply. And they intentionally lived in an old, rundown building that they didn't do a whole lot to fix up. They did some basic things, putting in a water system and stuff like that. But they intentionally lived poorly because they thought that was better for them.
Right.
He spent money, like he spent money on the kids. He bought them four-wheelers and dirt bikes and things like that. And when the FBI and the ATF, during the siege, to sort of demoralize them, they lined all those things up in front of where the kids were staying in the building, and they ran over them with tanks and laughed about it. Destroyed them, burned them on fire. Some of the guys had some cool cars and stuff, and they destroyed those. Trying to just demoralize them, you know?
Yeah.
They would flip them off. The FBI would flip them off, you know, or they would moon them. Just doing anything they mm-hmm. could to be as disrespectful as possible. They didn't take into account their religious beliefs at all. They kind of just made fun of it. Even the negotiators didn't really listen to any of that. It was just Bible babble to them.
Right.
You know, it was... And I think the same thing was in Waco. They weren't taken very seriously in Waco itself. A lot of people mm-hmm. in Waco knew about those crazy people live out there in that compound. But on the other hand, it's also Texas, and we have a lot of crazy people in Texas, so we're somewhat tolerant of such a thing.
True.
Especially in a town like Waco. It's not so much not that they're intolerant where we live in Dallas. There's a lot of different people here, too. But especially a place like that, if you're into guns and you got a whole bunch of people lives out there on that land, they don't really care. You know?
Right. Yeah. It's
I mean, they'll talk about you, you know, at lunch after church, but they ain't gonna do nothing about it.
Hey guys, it's Brian from Faith, Frauds, and Falsehoods. And I just recently launched a new website, downtimetheology.com. It's my place to go and drop in my notes and my thoughts on various theological concepts and questions that I get asked and questions that are raised when we're talking about different cults on Faith, Frauds, and Falsehoods and different ideas in the church over on Let's Talk Church. So come on over and join us. We're just getting started, right? So you can jump in at the very, very beginning. And leave a comment, join the conversation, bring up your own questions, and let's see where this takes us.
Okay, so continuing on talking about these social things. So we talked about what type of preacher he was, and we talked about his son a little bit. The thing I want to talk about was the people who were part of the Branch Davidians. They were not all Texans. They were actually from around the world. He actually had some people from Australia and from Britain, where he had done a little bit of recruiting. Part of that is because there are Adventist groups there. And a lot of the people in his organization, some came from some Christian places or from not being believers at all. The Thibodeau guy was raised really kind of without religion, maybe some Eastern religion influences from his mother, who was pretty hippie type person, you know. But a lot of the followers came from the Adventist in the first place. As we discussed, the Branch Davidians are kind of a split off the Adventist. Right. Is that pretty accurate? A split of a split?
Yep. Yep.
And some of the people had come from seminaries, some from other seminaries, and some from Adventist seminaries. And had heard about David and traveled there. They had a big celebration every so often. And they would have people travel to kind of check the place out. And they also offered a free place to stay for people. They offered a place for people to get cleaned up. So people came out there and got off drugs. Mm-hmm. It was a place to stay where people could come out there and get off drugs and keep their children, which was important. So for some people, they could go out there, get off drugs, because drugs were not allowed out there. Although some allege that they were doing meth, they say they weren't, and there's no evidence of that. But again, there was a lot, the government alleged a lot of things.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of that going around.
And But there were some who went out there to get off drugs, and they were able to keep their children. One, because you have other people to help with the children while you're doing the whole detox thing. They didn't run an official like detox program. They just, okay, you're out here. Drugs aren't allowed out here. We're going to help you through this. People were not allowed to stay for free all the time or forever. They had to eventually do some work, be a part of the group, help contribute to things. They worked at or ran some businesses. There was the gun business we talked about. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they owned or they just worked at a car business down the road where they helped fix up my cars and stuff. A lot of the guys were into mechanics and stuff. Okay. They would go out and do landscaping and yard work and such for people and ran some landscaping crews. So they work together to get the income they need. I'm always surprised by these groups we're looking at, how they raise money by getting all the free labor, basically, but how they all work together to make money. That's sort of a foreign concept in our culture, but it's more of a thing in other cultures where the men of the culture go out and they rate for the group. You know, if we were to go and talk to our greater families and say, okay, y'all, we're going to move out to this piece of land with these other people, and we're all going to work on the landscaping business or the website business, and we're all going to live together in a community to kind of save money, they would think, ooh, that's weird. That's kind of cult-like.
Right. Yeah.
But in other cultures, that's a more acceptable thing.
Yeah. I mean, in the Far East, that's it's not just acceptable. It's common, right? And even more common in several African cultures. It's just part of it, right? You live as an extended family that may be two families together, right? And you just become one big family.
Yeah.
Or multiple families.
When I was a kid, we sometimes lived in situations like that, not cult compound things, but like we may go live with my cousins and my aunt and uncles, and maybe a bunch of us live in a house and a bunch of us cousins all live there. And, you know, the uncles all went and worked in the construction business together. That happened a few times when we were kids. That was as a coping mechanism. So, cause we were poor, so we could, you know, eat. I remember we lived in a trailer park one time. My mom was the manager of the trailer park. And while people had their separate things, almost everybody in the trailer park worked at the chicken plant. And so as a community, we did a lot of things together. We often ate together. Friday nights, that was payday. We all ate at the same restaurant. Everybody in the trailer park ate at the same restaurant. A lot of people from the chicken plant. Outside, all the kids played together and back and forth and stuff. And it just, we were kind of our own little community over there, you know?
Yeah.
Churches get like that sometimes. You know, I've been a part of churches where we all had separate jobs, but we all worked so much in the church that we worked together a lot of times. And we ended up spending a lot of evenings together and a lot of meals together and a lot of things, you know? It didn't go quite as far as some of these do, but that was part of what they were offering out there was the community. And they would offer the community without all the religion at first. But then it would, well, they're giving me a place to stay, so I might as well sit for this sermon. And then, I'm three hours into a sermon.
Or whatever.
Yeah, they would call it a Bible study. So, but then, well, I'm obligated, so I'm going to sit for this whole thing, you know?
Right.
So that's how some people came into it. They would have big celebrations and they would be advertised in Adventist circles. And then they would get out there and realize, oh, this is something different. These aren't regular Adventists. Now, Adventism itself leads way to this because it leaves open for the prophecy. Can you speak to that a little bit about how that works with where they claim the prophecy and what was this prophecy even?
That's a question that I was not thinking we were going to be talking about. So, the Adventists as a whole are very, very involved in prophetic ministry, right? The idea that one person, multiple people within the church see and hear from God on a regular basis, right? And those are the people that are standing up and more or less leading the groups, right? In Koresh's case, right, he claimed the revelations from God, that he was going to be in charge rather than Rodan, which led to the whole fight and all the problems that we talked about last week. And people sided with him and said, we believe that your vision is the correct one. And so he took over, right? I don't know what more you want to get into as far as the theology of things.
Yeah, and I know we're not covering all the theology in this episode, but I wanted to make the point that Adventists already are taught that, oh, these are prophecies from a prophet, and we listen to them.
Yeah.
So he wasn't so far off. His prophecies didn't match fully the Adventist teachings, but they expounded upon them. So it was almost an addition to. So a lot of people he recruited came from them in the first place as, oh, he has another revelation, a new revelation.
Right.
You know? So it was kind of easy to get there from here type thing. And unlike some of the other people we've discussed, they thought they were teaching an apocalyptic message, which we'll get into some more, but they were not teaching that they were going to start the apocalypse. Or that they weren't looking to hurt nobody.
Okay, yeah, I'll give you that. They were not looking to...
They weren't teaching they were going to start the apocalypse. They were teaching they were going to be in charge during the apocalypse, though.
Right.
They thought they would be the stars.
Yeah, I mean, Koresh thought that he was Christ himself, but...
Maybe. There's some arguments on that.
No, he taught that he was the lamb that was opening the scrolls.
He taught he was the lamb, but there was Christ. Some argument on whether he thought the lamb was Christ or not. Which is our general interpretation.
Well, yeah, okay, good point. Yes, I'll give you that. He did have some questions, and I think he was kind of Nestorian in some of his thought. But we'll get to that next week.
Yes. But on the social side of that, he was their supreme leader. So they believed that God talked to him. So when he came to them and said, okay, I'm going to take your wives, they thought this was a message from God.
Yeah.
And who goes against a message from God? Let me ask you this. Have you ever in your life, I'm going to put you on the spot here, gone against something that you thought God was directing you to do, but you decided to do something different anyway?
Absolutely.
Were you right? Was God directing you? See, I made it kind of hard, and then I made it really hard right there, right?
The first one was easy. I mean, yeah, of course, I go against God every day. But, I mean, that's kind of what sin is, isn't it? But...
It is, but I'm talking about...
Is there a...
The Lord's directing me into this, and I'm using the word directing for us, because we don't necessarily talk about a direct revelation from God. That, you know, he sends the angel down and says, Brian, I need you to wear a black shirt to work tomorrow. Which would be easy for you.
The answer to that would be, I already wear a black shirt to work every day.
Right.
Because that's just what I've worn for the last however many years.
But my point is...
I don't know how to answer that without it leading into a super in-depth... 4-hour long conversation.
Okay, fair enough. My point is that if you sincerely believe God is leading you somewhere, then you are sincerely going to try to follow that. Right? You may reject that at first, but when you fully come to the realization God wants this and I'm doing this, as a follower, you want to follow God. Right?
Right.
And these people sincerely believed that God was talking to him. They believed this because they heard all the things he said and stuff. And so it was easy for them to just, okay, we're going to do this stuff. And what he was saying was not totally different than what they had grown up learning or had already been doing. He wasn't that much different. They didn't think of themselves as some sort of cult. And like a lot of the cults we talk about, it was little steps. In the beginning, they weren't so much different than everybody else. And then they became more different and more different and more different. At one point, they were discussing how in the beginning, it wasn't even that David was the lamb and they were going to have, he was going to have 24 children and all this. They were all going to be part of this. And then he came up with the whole seven seals thing. And then he told them they were going to go to Jerusalem. And then he decided they weren't going to Jerusalem and that didn't work out. They were, this was going to actually happen in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
It's convenient how things change.
It is, yeah.
Over time. And then, you know, then, well, actually, I'm going to take all your wives. You know, I just can't, I guess, hug up on that part there. They're like, that's like that big thing. So it's obvious that he was doing wrong things. I think that it's obvious the government didn't have a good justification to go in there and raid the place. Maybe they could have come up with one about the young girls, though, had they put the work in to do that and not killed a bunch of children in the process.
Yeah, I think they probably could have had the justification to raid it, but not with tanks.
I don't think they had the justification. I don't think they had the justification to raid over what they had because they only had a warrant for Koresh, and they could have arrested Koresh when he was outside the compound and then walked right into the compound with no big deal. So I don't think that would have been a big deal. I do think the negotiation at the end was ridiculous. I don't know why he would have even expected that they were going to wait for him to record some things first when they had already let him record some stuff that got aired on the radio. And then that wasn't good enough. And he did go back on his agreement with them. They lied about a lot of things too, especially related to milk for the children. Like they were trying to starve his children out by not letting food come in, you know?
It was very medieval warfare that went on.
Yeah.
A lot of,
you know, it's funny because I was listening to a podcast earlier this week about, was he Pope Julius the 10th? I believe he was the Pope right before Leo the 4th, Leo the 2nd.
I was going to say which Leo? There were a bunch.
this is the 1500s where the popes got really, really bad. The Borgia. Yeah. He was the Pope right after Borgia. And you're talking about medieval. And I was listening to that, and they was talking about medieval siege tactics he was using. He was the first pope to lead an army.
Because,
you know, popes should be leading armies. They shouldn't be. No justification for a pope to lead an army.
Right. Yep.
I'll give you justification. Jewish leaders should have had armies because God told them to get an army up. But we had Christ. And But they were using siege tactics too. They would surround a town and try to squeeze them off, cut off the water supply and things like that, which is one of the things they did. They cut off the water supply. It's hard to talk about the social aspects without talking about all the negative things they did in this raid, you know? But while other things on social, I just want to hit, cause we're almost out of time here. We're really close to it actually is that they were actually friendly with some people in the community. There was a local beer joint in town that they would like to go into town and drink beer, which is ironic for a religious thing. You assume they wouldn't drink, but they did. They were not allowed to be drunken, but they did definitely drink. And they'd like to go play rock and roll. Koresh actually bought a sound system and built a stage with his own hands because he was a carpenter, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
He was a carpenter, by the way.
Right.
I'll mention that again. He was a carpenter, by the way.
He was a carpenter.
So people thought there was a sign there, too. And built a stage, paid for the sound system, mainly so his band could play, but also create a venue where other bands could play. That Thibodeau guy writes in his book that for a little while there after that was built, that he kind of ran that part and helped run the bar. He bartended at the bar. And he stayed on the floor of the bar at night. Like, instead of staying out at Mount Carmel, he stayed there. He liked staying there because then he could carouse with the women. Because when he was out at Mount Carmel, he wasn't allowed to be with any women because he wasn't supposed to be doing that. Actually, David gave him a wife and said, here's your wife, here are your children. But he wasn't allowed to do anything that would make her do anything physical with her, you know?
Right.
But he introduced her to his mama as his wife. And these were his stepchildren, which were really David's children.
Right.
So that's weird. But the sheriff's deputies would come out there because they had been out there to some complaints from some of the neighbors. And the sheriff's deputies end up making friends with them and would come out there and shoot guns with them. Because they had guns. They knew they had guns. They were okay with this. They had the cool AR-15s, you know?
Right.
Not long after the raid in on Waco and this whole tragedy, Congress banned the AR-15 as an assault rifle and other guns they claim were assault rifles. Which, for the listener, an assault rifle is basically a black, scary-looking gun.
Right.
It's really not a strict definition there. The assault rifle ban eventually expired when a certain party lost control of the government. That expired, and that's something they're trying to repass now. But AR-15s are now legal again. They were legal then, and they're legal now. They were never legal.
Right.
Well, they're never legal automatic unless you had permits for it. And those permits are very expensive, and most people don't get them. And honestly, have you ever shot an AR-15?
No,
I have. I've owned AR-15s, and I wouldn't want one automatic. Like, if I was going to war and I'm fighting other people with automatic guns and trench warfare, then yeah, I see the reason for a machine gun. But even in warfare, you don't use it in full auto most of the time because you just spin through your bullets real quick and you don't hit nothing.
Yep,
the thing jumps all over the place. It's a little lightweight gun. Comparatively, and the thing will just jump all over the place if you try to shoot it in full auto. Even in semi-auto mode, I've used one with the bump stock, which are now illegal. Everybody's favorite conservative president made bump stocks illegal, by the way. Trump outlawed bump stocks. The conservative media seem to ignore this, but a bump stock is a thing that makes the gun perform similar to an automatic, but not exactly. Basically, if you hold your hand at the right angle and hold it just right, when the it'll use the recoil of the weapon to redo itself. So it'll shoot over and over again if you hold your hand at the right angle. Versus a fully automatic, you just hold the trigger down and it just keeps firing. But the same thing. You just go through ammo real quick and don't hit nothing. But they are fun to shoot, and the sheriff's deputies would come out there and shoot with them. So they had a pretty good relationship there in the community. Even if people thought they were weird, they were pretty, you know, even the ATF, who rented a house across the street, one of the guys, Robert, went over there and made friends with them. He was there up until a few minutes before the raid. And he says that he found David quite captivating in his preaching and things, and he didn't agree with him.
Right.
But even he sat and listened to the 3-hour preaching sessions.
Oh, 3-hour preaching is a bit much.
It is, but there are other denominations and stuff that do that. You know, we know preachers who probably do some of that. I know I do. I'm guessing some preachers we both know do that.
Could easily do that, yep.
So that by itself isn't a bad indication necessarily. I don't know. Reading what I know from the Bible, I don't know that Jesus ever preached super long.
I mean, you've got all of Matthew chapters 5, 6, and 7 as one long sermon. On the Mount.
Yeah, but that's not that long of a sermon. If you didn't add your commentary to it, you could read that whole thing in 15 minutes.
Yeah, but we have to remember that, well, the Gospels as they're written may or may not be the entirety of the words of Jesus. So it may only be the key points that Matthew pulled out of that.
You think Jesus
sat there and talked for a while?
Think they passed out little piece of paper and here's you make your notes today?
No, probably not. But they did shortly thereafter pass out some bread and fish. So,
well, the problem with the bread and fish is it just kept coming.
Yep.
They were Baptists. They were sure enough Baptists.
No.
Yeah, because only Baptists.
They were Orthodox.
Only Baptists would be passing out just barrels and barrels full of fish and bread. And only Baptists would take, what was it, 5 loaves, 2 fishes, and then claim that was hundreds of fishes and bread. That's a Baptist thing right there. I'm sorry, buddy. I got you. Dead to rights. Just,
I don't know. You came and ate with us a couple of weeks ago.
That's
and
true.
You specifically said that I found the only church in town that has better food than the Baptists.
Well, I might have said something like that. There was also alcohol there.
There was. There was.
I wasn't partaking of that when I said it. That's not what I'm trying to imply. But, yeah.
Yep.
But anyways, back on Koresh, I think I've covered most of the social things. I think we've answered most of the questions on that.
Yeah, I think so. It's kind of hard to pull out many other things. Just because there's so much out there that's only about the raid.
Well, okay. Well, let me speak to that a little bit. They were trying to recruit people, yes, but on a one-by-one basis. They thought they would recruit people, even still on a one-by-one basis, with his music. They would work to recruit people with his music. But they were not saying, oh, if you love this music, come to Mount Carmel. You know, they would individually invite people out and talk to them. They were not doing massive, you know, camp meetings or anything like that, any sort of evangelistic things. You know, Jones was, you know, sending his buses across the country. They weren't doing anything like that. They also didn't record a whole lot. They were not super technological.
Right, yeah.
He recorded a little bit and what during the raid, and he wrote down some stuff that got burnt up. So we don't have a whole lot. We're going to talk about his theology. We know some of it from some recordings, but we really don't have recordings of most of his stuff. They didn't do a whole lot. Even the Heaven's Gates people recorded a whole lot more stuff. They did some recruiting and stuff. Most of the other cults we've done recorded more things. These people did not.
Yeah, I mean, Alamo had a whole TV series and radio shows that he did. You know, it was... Yeah, so it's been tough to dig in on Koresh.
And
because if you search for Koresh, you find the raid. You don't find the years leading up to that.
Right. And I mean, when part of the story is the murder of a bunch of children by the federal government,
right.
That's what you're going to see over and over again. It's hard to see anything else beyond that. So, that's the story as we know it, folks.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Matt. I certainly appreciate it. And I guess next week we get to talk about some of their theology, or at least what little that we can.
All right. Well, y'all joining us next week.
Thank you for joining us here on Faith, Frauds, and Falsehoods. Don't forget that we have our website, faithfraudsfalsehoods.com, where we post a more detailed blog with references so that you can go and take a look at all of this information for yourself. Also, remember to share this with a friend and help us get the word out there for everyone else. We'll see you in the next one.